不同人员。
Housing Authority, City of Austin, and also the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation Board of Directors regular board meeting. And with that, Mr. Gerber, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Duncan Hall.
Present.
Commissioner Carrington.
Present.
Commissioner Hutchinson.
Present.
And Chair Willis, who is joining us in this.
Okay. Mary, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. And is there any public communication? No public communication. Okay, let's move on to the citywide advisory board update.
Lupe, coming up.
And Lupe, as you make your way up to the mic, let me tell the board real quickly. I think you all remember Keith Swenson. Keith was our longtime member of our technology management innovation team. Worked for the Housing Authority for almost 15 years. You got to know him most closely when he was serving after Andrea Galloway had left. He was in a lot of our meetings here helping us, and he's continued to serve under Jorge as well. Probably the time you've heard most about Keith was during the great freeze of back 3 years ago, when all of our systems went down, all the power was out, and Jorge had been on the job for about 2 weeks, and he and Keith managed to rig up with chicken wire and about 400 feet of wire and generators, all just enough power to be able to get out that month's checks, rental payments to our Section 8 landlords. But Keith sadly passed away of pancreatic cancer about a week ago Sunday, but was a much-loved member of the team. And so I wanted to just let you all be advised of that, because I know you all interacted with him on occasion. But a dear guy, and I need one to be apprised of that news. So we'll keep him in our hearts and his family in our thoughts and prayers.
Thank you for that.
Let me turn it over to Lupe to change to some more exciting and happier things.
Well, good morning, everybody. Hope everybody had a happy new year. Minutes for HACA Board, January 13, 2026. Lupe Garcia, call the meeting. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Call the meeting to order at 10:33 a.m. Leilani Villegas, Director of Community Development, read the minutes for the citywide board meeting on behalf of Veronica Castillo. I provided the treasurer report on behalf of my friend Alice Madrid. $2,600 was the balance. Presentations by Michael Roth, Vice President of PAMI. Congratulations to Gaston for the inspection, where they received a 98 score. Washing machines on the property will be replaced by February. Mr. Gerber, CEO, welcome all residents participating in the citywide board meeting through their community rooms. Remembering Bob and Kafka, I'm sorry, a voice for disability rights for over 40 years and a very good friend of HACA. Please keep Bob in your thoughts and prayers. He also thanked Lupe Garcia for FC and leadership during the Santa Rita relocations and all family that moved out of Santa Rita. Austin Pathways Updates, Leilani Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development. HACA will be closed Monday, January the 19th, observance of Martin Luther King holiday. All resident councils are receiving their new annual budgets beginning on January 1st, 2026. This year's Mayfest will be on Friday, May 13th. The theme is Texas Western. Donna McGreen, Youth Education and FSS Manager, scholarships opportunities are being shared on the One Voice newsletter. The HACA scholarship deadline is March 20th. Please check with the HACA website for other scholarships opportunities. John Espinosa, Workforce Development and Digital Inclusion Manager. The GED classes are being provided at Chalmers and at Georgia Manor. Enrollment is still open. We are onboarding the new spring ACC interns. Bromley, Bringing Home Health. We are hosting Valentine's themed classes focused on healthy relationships provided by the Austin Public Health. Daniel Ruiz, Home Ownership Manager. We're excited to celebrate our HACA first-time homeowners who are scheduled to receive the keys to their new home at Prospect Heights in February. Meeting was adjourned. Charles Thompson, Vice President of Coronado, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. And Jesse Austin, Vice President of Gaston, seconded the motion. Meeting adjourned at 11:47 a.m. Thank you.
Will we be getting a report on how the moves went?
You will. And,
yes.
And Gas is going to come up in just a moment and provide that to y'all.
Okay.
In fact, we could probably cut into that now if you're okay with that. Do you mind, Leilani? I'll let Ann come up and join you. And Lupe, stay up on the dime. Come on up, Ann. And we'll put up your presentation. Let me also note, we're going to talk in just a second also about Santa Rita. Ann's going to give you just a quick report out under staff reports. So we'll talk, because it's timely, talking about the resident relocation mm-hmm. and then touch a little bit on Santa Rita very quickly for just a few minutes. But at the end of that, Ann's going to come around to each of you as we work to make an application to the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs for financing. One part of the financing that we are potentially seeking will require each of your signatures on that. So Ann will come around to each of you and show you where to sign afterwards. But Ann, give the quick rundown because we knew this question was going to come.
Good afternoon, commissioners, staff, and guests. I'm Ann Gass, Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for the Housing Authority. And I want to give you a quick update on our renovation project. Let's see. All right. We'll start with Rosewood. Rosewood Courts has been under construction for several years now. We're at the end of the day going to have 184 units at Rosewood, but we had our first 35 units delivered. That first building there, four-story building, has been delivered. We still have 89 units to come. I've got some photos here of our move-in. These are our Santa Rita families. So we'll talk a little bit more about Santa Rita families. But these are our – yes, ma'am. As of last check, we had 24 of the 35 occupied. And that was a week ago, so it's probably increased since then. Yeah, they're working to occupy. Yeah. So these are our Santa Rita families, Lupe's longtime neighbors who have come into Santa Rita. From our perspective, the moves went great. The residents were cooperative. The relocation team was fantastic. The movers were fantastic. Lupe, do you have any comments on how that move to Rosewood went?
I think it went very well. Everybody was excited, ready to move. I do want to say something about the movers. The movers were so polite. I'd seen movers before, but these movers were so nice with the residents. Like, what do you? And they took everything. They were like, okay, ma'am, where do you want this? And they were asking the families, where do you want this item? Where do you want this item? So I thought that was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten great feedback on the units. So we're just really proud of being able to get these units occupied at Rosewood Courts. It's been a long time coming. So the timeline going forward, Building 2 delivery is going to be late February. Building 3, the final building, is going to be mid-March, as well as the office. And then the WOW Center, which we've also called the Welcome Center, it's the historic center. WOW stands for What Once Was, our historic center. We're partnering with E4 Youth. That'll be coming at the end of March. So lots of really exciting things happening at Rosewood. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end. But so that's our Rosewood status. Santa Rita Court. So Santa Rita has 97 units. We had 7 vacant to start with, so 90 families relocated. The property, that was as of January 2nd, so the property as it sits today is all fenced up. You've driven by, it's It's all secured. We have security there at night just to make sure that we don't have any damage done. But so we're starting to do abatement, and right now it's actually in process. We'll start demo hopefully middle of the month, and so we're not demoing these single-story bungalows, just the two-story newer units that it will come down. We're hoping, and we're doing this again in two phases, so we're hoping to close the first phase in April and start construction, vertical construction then, with first units coming in December of 2027. So lots of exciting things happening at Santa Rita as well. Anything? Hey, Luca, you want to add anything?
The kiddos, how are they adjusting? The ones that are going to school, that they're being bused to the schools that they're supposed to be, or?
You know, Mary, I haven't gotten an update from Tiffany on that. I haven't heard anything bad, but I don't have any specifics. Can I report back to you separately on that with some specifics?
Luca,
have
you
heard anything?
The families are having a little trouble getting the kids to school. Because some of the kids, they have the special needs classes, weren't accepted back at Zavala. So they had to transfer them over to Black Shear. But either way, if they even are going to Zavala or they're going to Black Shear, they still have to walk. And there's kids there in the property right now that are not going to school. And that's very, very concerning to me. I've asked the students who aren't joining school, and well, because my mom can't take me, cause she has to go to work early, or we don't have a car, or we're just too scared to walk down the street. Now, Chicon, you have to cross the street over to Black Shear, and there's no guard, so I myself and another resident, we walk the kids to Black Shear, and then we wait for them at the corner to cross them back over. Because that's a safety issue. Because, you know, the cars are coming down the hill, and the way Black Shear stands, they're facing this other street, and they're this way. So there's cars parked here, and the kids just cross over. And that's, to me, that's a big concern. I don't know, because, I mean, I don't have children in this school district or anything, so I really don't know. But I remember that Zavala used to have cross guards, but I don't know if they're here. I know that in front of the school there is like a cross guard, but the kids don't go that way. They come down this way over to Chicon.
Are they crossing at Salina, or are they crossing up at 11th?
No,
Are they crossing down the hill or up the hill?
Up the hill.
There's still a cross guard there.
We absolutely can. We know the principal.
Yeah.
We know the folks. If you and Sylvia don't mind jumping in and
would you keep me in?
Absolutely.
We'll let you know.
Resident
protection
agent. Remember, we had a protection resident protection committee.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing Chalmers.
Yep.
So we got all that settled. So by the time the kids we moved. Which they didn't have to move far, but they knew where they were going, and they were going to be bused. They knew where they were going to be bused.
Yeah.
How come that wasn't done?
Well, so I know from the bus standpoint, with the kids being so close to Black Shear, buses only
travel, that one,
right,
understand.
For the 2 miles.
Right.
We have been in contact with Zavala and AISD, working real closely with them. I can give you all the details, but there's an act called McKinney-Vento that we were hoping to be able to use that would allow the kids to stay at their school,
uh-huh.
But they have to be officially homeless. They can't have a lease anywhere. And so it took us a while to figure out the mechanics of that. There was a little bit of question about whether we would be able to use that or not to keep the kids at Zavala.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out that we couldn't as long as they were in a lease. So we were working closely with them.
Oh, okay.
My hope is that since these kids are going to be, for example, at Rosewood, the kids are going to be at Rosewood for 2 years. So I hope that they'll be able to find their new home at Black Shear and settle in at Black Shear and spend those 2 years at Black Shear. And then when the time comes, move to Zavala, or they may have aged out of Zavala, you know, by the time this
time. They need to be in school.
They need to be in school.
Yeah, missing another year.
I'll report back. I've already got a message.
Yeah, we're getting right on top of that. We want the kids in school. That's an expectation of living at Rosewood Courts.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue with Blackshear and Oak Springs. Oak Springs is closed this year, and those students,
mm-hmm.
which is Booker T. Washington State, they're going to Blackshear.
Yeah.
But next year, Blackshear is supposed to close, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen with the students who are now Blackshear? They would have to go over to Oak Springs, which would require bus transportation.
And we'll have a whole lot more kids at Rosewood by this time next year because all the other units will be occupied as well.
Yeah. Well, keep us posted on all.
Will do.
We definitely will.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah.
That's fun. If you see anything else, even before you come to the board meeting, let us know. Let's jump on that because the Tenant Protection Team's got those relationships with AIFC and ready to go.
Yep.
Sorry that's happened. How many kids do you think you have?
How many kids
is it that? They're not going to school.
I'm going to say at least 10.
Really? Okay. We'll
get into it.
Yeah.
Yep.
We need to do door-to-door knocking.
Yeah.
Kids got to go to school.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're running.
Okay. Yeah, so in addition to the 23 families from Santa Rita that went to Rosewood, we had 40 that moved to a PAMI-managed, HACA-owned property. We have 18 where we're passing through subsidy to some of the other AAHC properties. So we've got them there. We found good places for everybody. And again, they're going to be gone from Santa Rita for a couple of years. So we wanted to make sure everyone was comfortable, and it sounds like everyone's feeling pretty good about where they are. So that's good. Then the other project that we have going is Prospect Heights, which is our Habitat for Humanity homeownership project, our 12 homeownership units. I think you all heard the staff went out and did a build day at Prospect Heights. So these are just some photos from our build day. I went, Sylvia went. We had a blast. It was so much fun. It was really nice to get into the home. So there's our whole crew. So we are really close on Prospect Heights. The closing calls with the lender and the title company and Habitat and HACA and all the attorneys will start this month, and then we start closings second quarter of 2026. So really exciting. And so to celebrate all this excitement, this brings me to my last slide. We have some upcoming events that we really hope that you all will be able to join us for. The first one on the agenda is the Prospect Heights home dedication. That will be put on in partnership with Habitat for Humanity, and it's already scheduled for February 5th at 11 a.m. So I think that was on your list of events that you get. So hopefully, again, that is on your calendars. We're really excited about that event. And then also we have a Santa Rita groundbreaking and a Rosewood grand opening that we want to do this spring. And I think these are going to be some of our biggest events yet. These are going to be just a huge party. When I think about all the different entities and people that have put time and effort, particularly into Rosewood, in the 10 years since we started, Sylvia and I were reminiscing about all the people that have been involved, and the invitee list is just going to be huge. So getting those on the calendar sooner rather than later is critical to making sure that we can put on the kind of event that these projects, Santa Rita and Rosewood, deserve. So That's the gist of my report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have we heard from Fred McGee?
We have not heard from Fred. We have not heard from Fred McGee. Sylvia and I sat down with him when we were doing the outreach for Santa Rita, and he had some thoughts, and generally positive thoughts, constructive suggestions. And since then, we haven't heard from him.
But nothing about Rosewood.
Nothing about
that
Rosewood.
That was where he was such an agitator. Huh. Maybe that, I guess that's a
maybe
big thing, huh?
Maybe mellows out.
Well.
He can be.
And when you go over there and take a look at it, I mean, hopefully that kind of silencing.
I think we can be so proud of the historic preservation that we've done there, and I hope that everyone in the community will be equally proud of what we've done to preserve the history and tell the story of Rosewood Courts. It's going to be really exciting when it's all done. I can't wait to show it off to y'all.
And the visitor center and the history really being captured, and we look forward to in the next couple of months we'll have opportunities to not only walk you through units but also through the restored units to see just how you know, it looks like 1937 on the outside, but on the inside, it's every bit as modern as you want it to be.
We have the wooden screen doors going in. We have the casement windows. Oh, yeah. I mean, it really is just looking so beautiful. I got to see the mock-up of the doors yesterday. So it's definitely going to be something to be proud of and something to celebrate. And so eager to get that scheduled so we can...
Will he get an invitation? Mike, I don't know that I've ever seen you speechless.
Yes, of course. Of course, yeah. These are public events, and we welcome the public. And I would just note, Dr. McGee contributed to the historic designation that Rosewood now has on the property. Some parts of it weren't easy to be sure, but Dr. McGee wasn't the only one. There were other folks there, and remember, I mean, this has been a 13-year journey. I mean, I started on a Rosewood four weeks after I started on this job. And we weren't able to do it not just because of Dr. McGee, but because of public trust that this agency had not yet developed, not with the community, to make it so that we could do that project. So we've now built that in incredible ways, and you're seeing the fruits of it. So I just want to make sure that it's not, one person may have articulated it in a particular way, but there were lots of people who were articulating lots of things to us back in those days in ways that we really needed to hear that made us a better agency. So absolutely, everyone's invited. We want folks to come, and I hope that while it may not be perfect for them, that they say, good job, well done, and that we really did care about getting the history right, but also creating something new and wonderful for residents today. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the... So at the end of today, we'll have a big planning discussion. I know everybody brought their calendars, which I appreciate. Anything else from you guys? Okay. Thanks, Lupe. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
Commissioners, with your permission, we'll turn to the...
Sir, I'm not finished.
Sorry.
I just have... where's Leilani?
Right behind you.
I've never seen you choked up.
Never seen you speechless. I've never seen you choked up.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know if y'all know, but my good friend Alice Madrid passed away. And so I got a call on City Whiteboard. It was announced there, and then Phil called me. She passed away that morning. So I just want to let you know that, and I would like to have a small memorial for Alice. She did text me for Christmas a real pretty point. I know that I get emotional, but it's because I am so close to this family. And as a leader, you have to have compassion for them. So I'm only asking just for a small memorial.
Absolutely. Whatever we can do to help to celebrate Alice's life. I think board members, I think board members that you all met Alice a number of times. She was a citywide advisory board leader. She was the president of Gaskin Place for many years, and had really given voice to. She was very active in safety and really did a wonderful job. She really was a very faithful servant. I'm stunned. We've had so much loss at the beginning of this year.
Yeah,
loss. I was celebrating that. Sharing that. Keith Swenson had passed. Bob Kafka from the DAF just passed away. We lost a maintenance guy named John Rivera, who retired. But and now this. So it's not been a joyful season from which we've lost some friends.
Right. And so in the next episode. So, sir, I wanted to know, I was going to ask the board, you and the board, if we could, we're asking for IMONS for $15,000 for this coming year. Mm-hmm. We appreciate and we really honor all what y'all do for us and the IMONS. So moving forward, we're expecting bigger and greater things coming up really, really soon. And you'll hear from us once we get the answer.
So thank you for that request to the board. We're going to have a budget conversation a little bit later today. Mm-hmm. That Barbara will brief the board on our budget circumstance. Mm-hmm. And then we're actually bringing the budget to the board in March.
Okay.
February. And so we'll take that under advisement. And just reading the room, I think there's, you know, a lot of people here are very appreciative and deeply respect the work that IMOMS does. So thank you for bringing that to the board's attention.
Thank you. And we're working towards that conference already. Yeah. And I have another request. Can we hold a conference here?
Oh, of course. Yeah. We'd be thrilled. Here at the... please.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Thank you.
That's what's meant to... It's April, wants to be used. Yeah.
On April 24th.
If the room's available, and I suspect it is, we'll be thrilled to have you. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's exciting.
It is.
This will be the Women's Mind at Ease Conference.
That's the IMONS 5 years.
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be that's great. Can we hold everybody though? Let's talk about it.
Of my IMONS do work now, so I want to bring Elise. Because I want to give room to everybody else to come also. So I'm thinking about 45 IMOMs.
And then their friends and family and such.
And plus the guests and...
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about whether or not... let's talk about whether or not the room can handle that number of folks effectively. Because we want to make sure there's enough space for you know, everybody.
Piece of construction of another piece, just making sure that there's not...
It shouldn't.
And the
parking? Yeah. Yeah, it shouldn't. But absolutely. I mean, and I would say citywide meetings and other meetings that you're welcome to use the space. We'd be thrilled to. Yeah, we want stuff to be used and activated. That's yeah.
So
that's what built it.
So we can have an IMOMS meeting here?
Yeah. Anytime.
Okay. Just because I'm having a little difficulty trying to work in with Selena. So I haven't had my meetings with IMOMS and right now, we're trying to organize, Mary and I, with the city, the advisory board, what we want to do for the conference. So I don't have a place to work from.
Yeah, I think we were trying to get set up also at Rosewood, at Selena, to have some office space there. But we've got office space, you know, we don't need to negotiate this at the board meeting.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of office space all over the place, mm-hmm. and we've got all, you can use any space we got. No problem at all.
Okay.
Anything else you got?
That's it.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. Do we have someone on staff that is keeping a schedule on the use of the conference room?
Yeah, it's on Ed's system. Mm-hmm.
So they just need to put it into the Outlook.
Who all has access to that?
Everybody. All staff.
Okay.
But if there's someone who's in the space and we need to shuffle people around, managers and directors, and we can move people around to different space if we need to. So, and the conference, IMOMS, resident events would take precedent because we don't do that many resident events here. So any resident event that we wanted to do here, we would move staff elsewhere.
Okay.
Because the resident event would take priority.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Mm-hmm. So commissioners, moving to the consent agenda. Let me tell you about today real quick. As you know, several items have been dropped from today's agenda. So you're not going to take up item number 2, item number 3, or item number 5. So we're only dealing today with items number 1 and 4. And then we have some reports, much like you just heard from Ann Gass. We have a follow-on report that you'll hear from Barbara Chen, and a follow-on report that you'll hear from Laura Bodai. And then we'll have a conversation about calendars and scheduling. So item number 1 on the HACA agenda is asking your approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on December 18th, 2025. Declan Hall moves and Apostola seconds. Is there further conversation? All in favor say aye. Ayes have it. We'll move then to item number four, but we'll take actually that item up first on the AAHC agenda and turn it over to Chair Carrington. Birthday girl Carrington.
Thank you,
Mr. You're welcome.
Let me get to it.
Okay. The meeting has been called to order. Quorum has been established. And we need to approve the minutes of the meeting of December the 18th, 2025.
I move
approval. All moves. Mayor Tyra seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any discussion? I'm seeing none. That passes. Then, the action item for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is actually its item number two, and it is to approve resolution 00286, authorizing AAHC to execute any and all documents to take all the actions necessary to facilitate the acquisition of the Cascades at Onion Creek, which consists of multifamily housing units and associated amenities in Austin. So, cause AAHC to own the property and to execute any documents to facilitate the consummation of the transaction. So, is that Suzanne?
Thank you. Sure. Board members, Mr. Gerber, staff, guests, I'm excited to present to you Cascade at Onion Creek. We were presented with a chance to partner with a new partner, Cadence Multifamily. They're a local development firm in Austin. They've got over 25 years of experience. We're working with Bob Ruggio and Curtis Davidson. Bob wanted to attend, but he needed to go out of town. They're having a surprise birthday party for his 85-year-old father. So I told him, go. they have done properties in San Antonio, San Marcos, Austin. They like to situate them off the I-35 corridor. This property is located at 2213 Cascades Avenue, so it's in South Austin. It is part of a 200-acre master plan development. There's a lot of single-family homes in this development, and actually Curtis Davidson has developed a lot of those for the master planned development community. Those homes range anywhere from $400,000 to $750,000. So this is a pretty high opportunity area. This property is 358 family units. It was completed in 2024 in two phases, and it's estimated about 26 acres on both of the phases. We have a unit mix of 238 one-bedroom, 108 two-bedroom, and 12 three-bedrooms. They're pretty large square footage. The one-bedrooms are 654 square foot, two-bedrooms 1128, and the three-bedrooms are 1365. This one is in the Austin Independent School District, and the schools that are assigned to this property are Blazier Elementary, Blazier Intermediate and Paredes Middle School, and then Aikens High School. It's situated right next door is a property called Aspire at Onion Creek, and Cadence Multifamily owns that property as well. It's a 4% tax credit property, so I think we're going to get some really good synergy between the two properties. You know, for anybody that's over income there, we can refer them to Cascades and vice versa. We also, if you go a little bit south, is our Three Hills property that we purchased, that we went in on with our partners Journeyman Group. So it's doing really good in that area, so we're real excited to be able to get in on Cascades as well. This one is going to be refinancing the construction loan and bringing us in. It will be with HUD financing, and it'll be through Mason Joseph, who we've partnered with several times. A lot of LDG properties and journeyman properties. The estimated loan amount is $65 million. And the property management group will be Florney Properties Group. They're based in Columbus, Georgia, but they have a lot of presence in Texas. And they do already manage the property and the Aspire property. We vetted them very, very closely, and they're doing a really good job. And they're pretty class act, so we're real comfortable with that. So if y'all have any questions, I'd love to answer them for you.
Suzanne, I note that it's in lease-up, but I don't see that you've indicated what percentage lease-up. And do we know of those units that are leased, how many of them are, what the income limits are for those families?
We're in the process of doing a file audit. Mm-hmm. I know that they have come up with some 80% and 60%. Not exactly sure what the percentage is on that one. We are at 90% leased right now.
What period of time will we have to for them to meet the occupancy requirements, the income requirements, once we close?
As of the closing, those certain number of units will be reserved. And it will depend kind of if they're not already compliant at the time, lease turnover then, so that next available units become compliant.
Is there a time period for that, Bill, or is it just...
Not specified, but it would be as soon as you can get them in there.
We want to get it turned, within like the year. So it's a year to a year and a half. So any of the ones that come vacant, then we'll make sure that we put affordable people in.
Qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, questions? No questions? Any questions? Yes, it is. Are there perhaps other opportunities with them?
They have already said that if we get this one across the board, they are going to discuss another one with me. But it'll be a new construction one.
And I would just note, Ron speaks highly of lots of people, but Suzanne is a whole different thing. And she has spoken so highly of these folks and how they're this partnership, and she's very discerning, and so it's we're excited about this. I'm excited about it.
I do have a question. So who's going to run the property?
The property management is called Florney Properties Group.
Okay.
And they're in Georgia.
Yeah, they're based out of Georgia, but they've got a lot of properties here in Texas that they're managing. And
they are managing the one next door.
Yes. Okay. And this one already. So we met them when we went out and toured, and I talked to them in very detail. Yes. I'm a little tougher on people. They were really good. So they've got... Because they're managing the tax credit next door, I feel very comfortable with them managing, and getting the affordability. Because some management companies only do market rate, and they just don't get affordable.
The property that's next door, mm-hmm. that came online first before this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are there any more questions from any of the members? Okay, well, hearing none, then we need a motion to approve Resolution 00286. Mary moves. Carl seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you, Suzanne and Ron. You all had said you thought it was going to be a slow start. 26. Is that still the case?
we've got people calling on the new construction side. But.
Yes, I mean, I think it'll be a little bit slower progress. I think we got some work to do on policy thinking and directions we want to go to as not only as an executive team but as a board, and spend some time with you all talking about that before we really jump into any of the deals. And it is a little tighter out there and a little slower out there. But by the way, this deal, we've been working on this for how long? Six, seven months probably. So when we bring something like this, it didn't happen yesterday. It takes us that long to get comfortable with it. And I want to echo what Suzanne said about Flournoy, the management company. They're very, 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 very qualified, very good, very professional. We're very impressed by their team, so we feel real comfortable about that. But I suspect it'll be a little bit slower in this first 6 months until we, you know. Not to say we're not going to keep looking at good things in high opportunity areas and things that make sense, both from the public benefit side and our side, but it's a little interesting going on. A lot of interesting things going on in the market right now, too.
So Paul, we had a question, comment.
No, it was more of a comment going to Ron's comment about things being slow. I just came from a meeting, and at the meeting there was an investor, and they invest all over the country, and they just said they're not investing. Okay. I was saying that I just came from a meeting, and in the meeting, we were meeting with a legislator, and there was an investor there who invests heavily in all across the country, and they said they're absolutely not investing in Texas because of pending lawsuits regarding HB 21. And they expect, because they just said they count in their 12 lawsuits. So why would you put yourself in investing money when there's all this litigation going on? And they said they expect that several others are taking the same position. So in terms of new deals, Ron said they'll be slow, but the investment community is kind of hands off of Texas right now.
Investors don't like is uncertainty, and we certainly have that.
And that goes to Freddie and Fannie too, your main lenders who are. Already a little bearish on Austin because of the overbuilding that we've seen in the last couple of years, but also that it's just that legislation is just unpredictable, and they're very cautious. They're making it very hard for us to loan. What you will see coming from us is over the course of the year for sure is we've got three or four deals that we know that those loans are matured, and we'll be going back out for refinancing on those existing assets that we have. So I think that'll be more of a focus for us as well. So there'll be some difficult ones, too, but we'll get there.
So maybe that's a good segue to two other issues within AHC. One is that, to make sure that we have all of our ducks right and in a row, and that we're, really assessing the return on our investment, that we have sound policies, that we're making the impact that we think we need to make, that we know we're making, and documenting it. We are, going to spend some time next. We're spending some time now, working to those ends, and that's meant increasing some of our staffing. So you will see at next month's board meeting a pretty substantial increase. It's been, when I started here, we had five properties, seven properties, and we had four staff people, and now we have 100 properties and we have two staff people, three staff people. I'm sorry, it went to three 2 years ago. But it's time we need to add asset management capability, some policy and data capability, and so you'll see a proposal that basically adds four new staff positions to Ron, three and a half new staff positions to Ron's shop, and we think it makes sense, and we think it's still probably understaffed. Just to give you an example by comparison, Strategic Housing Finance Corporation that operates here in the city, which has 12 properties, 14 properties, something like that, they've got at least that many staff members.
They have 12 or 13.
12 properties.
12 or 13 staff members.
And 12 or 13 staff members, yeah. So we don't need property to staff member coverage quite like that, but we do need more capability within AHC to be able to make sure we're hitting what we need to hit. So a lot of that kind of work happening early on as well. And the reason for that, and rightfully so, is what you also have in front of you, which is a story from the Houston Chronicle yesterday, that talks about a particular state representative, Representative Gates, who has been, and Chairman Gates has been leading the effort on House Bill. He was the author of House Bill 21 last legislative session. Two legislative sessions ago, he was the lead to try to remove and to change the way public facility corporations under Section 303 were done. So there were dramatic reforms to Section 303, and there were no more 303 deals really done. There have been dramatic changes now to Section 394, Housing Finance Corporations. Some of those are good. Some of those are really good changes, dealing with traveling housing finance corporations. But now there are very few that the market is really atrophied because of some of the actions within House Bill 21. And the representative and others have indicated that they are coming to 392, which is our statute, next. So we're concerned about that and tracking this carefully. So at the February board meeting, Ron and I would like to introduce you to Kate Goodrich. Kate is now with K&L Gates. She does government relations work on behalf of us in Fort Worth and Texas NARO. And because she's local, I'd like for her to meet you all. Carl certainly knows some of this work through his work in the legislature. The chairman knows some of this work in his work in the legislature. But this article is a nice summary of the current state of play and some of the conflicts that are involved, some of the legal issues that are involved, some of the players that are involved, and we'll have a deeper conversation next month. But just wanted to tell you why you have this in front of you. So, Ron, did I miss anything?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
All right.
Are we getting any feedback on our community report summary? This is the third or fourth time we've seen this with the developments that are coming to us.
We haven't had any public comment or anybody actually commenting on it, and we haven't had any open records requests on those deals that since we've been doing that, which I suspect will come at some point. But I think I think I said this last meeting. What in getting feedback back from our partners, and it kind of was a little surprising that especially from the Belveron team, who get what we do, but it really had them step back and think about what they were doing and why they were doing it and how they were doing it and what the benefit was. I don't think any of us really put we always put thought, but not to this extent and not to really change the paradigm of your thinking away from how we used to do things and adapt to, trying to adapt to the new things that are coming our way. So I've heard several good, no complaints, nobody going, this is a burdensome thing, I don't know why we're doing this, this is a waste of time. They're very, very positive. So from the developer side, I think it's been received very well. And I think overall, if you read them, which we did, we went back and looked through them again as we're working with Houston and other places trying to get a uniformed one, which it's going to be very hard to do. But looking at them, there's some really good information and some things that, I missed the first time. So the CWS team and also the Belveron team that we've done our lease transactions, their one feedback was we talked about the financial test. And if we think about, there's more to a deal than just the financial test. It meets the 50%, but that's a number that a representative threw out and said we need to meet 50% of the benefit. With really no rhyme or reason as to where you came up with that number, he just threw it out there and said that. And so everybody's running with this 50%. But it's made them think more about the public benefit. And I've used Commissioner Ritchie's charge of, saying that you're putting an affordable unit, what is that doing to me? I'm not living there. I'm away from there. How is it affecting me as the public? And I think, there's a case to be made that, if the deal is on the cusp or close to it or not quite there, it shouldn't be an automatic no without looking at all the other reasons why this deal may fit into a certain. And that goes, I think, statewide. All cities have different economic reasons for doing what they're wanting to do when it comes to affordable housing. So, anyway, I think it's been a positive thing. I'm My only regret is I think we should have been doing this sooner. I just didn't think of it. I think it was a great suggestion, and I think it's been a very, very a good experience. So, and we're learning from it every deal we do. They keep evolving it, especially if we repeat our partners. They think through that and look at it a little bit deeper. So I think it's been a really positive.
Well, no one did it because I think, you know, we consider ourselves to be, you know, good guys in the market. And we're behaving ethically. We're bringing things forward to public boards. We're following closely the advice of counsel. You know, one of the things that's interesting and highlighted in this article, and we knew the extent of it, I just didn't fully appreciate it. You know, there have been these things called traveling housing finance corporations, which are housing finance corporations in far-flung places, Pecos, Pleasanton, Cameron County. And they've gone and they've gone into places hundreds of miles from where they are based. You know, in Pecos, they go into Austin or they go out to Houston, and they don't tell the public officials there that they're taking a property off the tax rolls. And so the result is that, you know, suddenly all the other taxpayers have to make up for that cost for their fire department, police department, and other city services. And, you know, well, who authorized that? Somebody out in Pecos. But we didn't realize the extent of it. But just to give you an example to show you the concern that was very legitimate that Representative Gates highlighted, during the 140-day legislative session alone, traveling HFCs closed, meaning they signed the agreements and got their tax exemptions, closed on 236 properties worth nearly $8 billion. And while the tiny agencies, lawyers, and middlemen collected millions erasing the properties from local tax rolls, they stood to cost residents across the state more than $175 million a year. It was just out of control, said Senator Paul Bettencourt. So the abuse was real that they were identifying. What happened was they just went vastly overboard, and now we have an environment that makes it very difficult to do housing finance. And so, you know, we can see it coming our way. And so we want to increasingly this year, as we work through next month, you'll meet our government relations, some folks on our government relations team. The following month, you'll have an opportunity. In a couple of months, we'll hopefully see some things about interim charges coming and a little more about the action in the legislature. And we'll want to keep you all updated on sort of the state of play. So.
When did we first hear or see these traveling HFCs?
So I think they came to a lot of people's attention in December of 2024. No, I'm sorry about it. 2023. That's when there was sort of the first articles about them. And I think initially it was something people figured out as a way to get around 303. And then once the light was shined on them and they knew there was the legislature was going to meet and sort of close this loophole, then all of a sudden they just took off exponentially to try to do as many deals as possible. In essence, we got to beat the clock. So they were calling folks, trying to just do deals all over the place. And anybody who was a willing party, they were, you know, glad to do it. And in most cases, the communities or the governmental entities that engaged in those were governmental entities in areas that are relatively, you know, low income. In essence, the counties have a lot of low income folks. The HFCs, which are part of the cities, those cities have a lot of low income citizens. So they were eager to take advantage of it because it was a way with very little effort to plug their own budget holes for their budgets. So if you've got a budget, as you heard, Pecos, Cameron County, they needed to fill budget holes. This was easy. This was easy money. It just came their way, and all they had to do was say, okay, fine, we'll partner with you. And very little effort on their part because the property itself is in hundreds of miles away. They don't have to worry about managing it. You know, that's somebody else. If there's some compliance issue, the developer takes care of it. They just get the money, and they do whatever they want to with it, which is another something else that's an opinion that we're waiting for the Attorney General to issue is that those governmental entities who took the money and used it for anything other than affordable housing, that money has to go back because the statute clearly says the revenues devised from those transactions have to be used for affordable housing. So there will be a whole onslaught of litigation after that, trying to figure out a way to claw that money back because they, whether you spend it on police, fire, paving streets, parks, whatever, but the statute is very clear, those funds can only be used for affordable housing.
So 2.5 years ago or so,
I think. Around the time of the amendment of the 303, right, I think.
Okay, so this was something until at least a couple of years ago. Like I'd never, I knew about HFCs, but I had certainly never heard about the traveling HFCs.
Frankly, many of us who've seen them for a long time have long held a more conservative legal view, probably, Cronos, that we would not sign off on some sort of entity doing transactions outside the jurisdiction of its sponsor. And I think it wasn't until there were folks more willing to go advise their clients to do that that we saw the proliferation of that.
And, you know, so the first time I heard of the HFC was 1984. I was working for Rodney Ellis. He was on the city council. And there was a guy, Rodney and I used to joke about, I know this is public, but this is the truth. We used to joke, like, what does he do in the mayor's office? And then one day he ran up to our office with this big piece of paper, you know, the bond and everything. He had been named as the executive director of the city's HFC. He was like, well, what is it? The Housing Finance Corporation. We issue bonds for single family and multifamily development. So I always thought more on the single family. You know, it's an issuer of bonds to help, you know, facilitate housing, both single family and multifamily, but most of it was on
single family side.
And so when I heard about this, what they were doing, it's like, oh yeah, they do multifamily, but mostly it's single family deals.
And it focused on homeownership.
Yeah.
First time when I first went to work for the housing agency in 85, that's all we had. We had mortgage revenue bonds that financed single family houses. Has TALFA taken, I mean, sort of, where is TALFA in all of this?
They were taking, well, we worked very closely with them.
Mm-hmm. And then,
So they were very active and took the lead, and we worked with them. So TAP, Texnaro, and everybody, but because it was their industry, we had to let them take the lead, and we were behind them, very supportive, providing whatever assistance we could. But they came up.
What's their position?
They opposed the traveling HFC. They saw them as these were folks who had just gone off the reservations. And so as an industry, as an association, they were very public. They opposed it. You know, they didn't want the legislation to go as bad as it did because, you know, for them, they do some very good things because, again, single family, multifamily, they make fees and stuff. In fact, when there were the wildfires up in the Panhandle, they stepped up and provided funding for those residents who were displaced to live in vacant developments who they helped, you know, make ready and get them. So they, you know, they serve a good purpose. And it took them a while to start talking about their public benefit. And I think one of the things that we thought was sort of put them behind the eight ball was over the years, they've never gone in and modernized their statute. They never talked about who really they were. And so people didn't know who they were. And so they got defined by the bad actors in their industry. And so they were trying to go back and, you know, tell people who they were, but everybody's like, oh, HFC, yeah, we just heard about you guys, you know, and so
too late.
Despite the fact they do a lot of good things, it was, as Ron just said, it was too late. And so that's one of the things that we've been doing in terms of Texnaro and Kate and Eric. You know, that was one of the reasons why they got actively involved with working with TALFA, knowing that this would come, and it gave us an opportunity to explain who PHAs are well in advance And so, you know, so now, you know, we're working actively to try to identify what we can come up with that the industry, PHA, is going to live with, and still make, you know, make changes to the statute to address some of the concerns that the legislature may have, but not go down the road that the folks went with PFCs and HFCs.
And there was a PHA bill. Representative Gates did drop a PHA bill. It had a very high number, whereas this bill, House Bill 21, was one of the first, because they do them in numerical order. So House Bill 21 was really a great advantage because it was going to be taken up first in almost every instance that where it came before a committee or went to the floor. It had lots of privileges. Our bill that was going to put those same kinds of restrictions on public housing authorities was, I think, 1935 or something like that. It was way down there, and they had hearing on it, but it never quite got there. Obviously, all the action was on House Bill 21. So, lots to focus on there. But we'll revisit that next board meeting. And Commissioner, I don't think there's anything else for executive session.
Well, I'll just say one of the reasons why I'm late is because I was actually meeting Eric and came down. We're meeting with a legislator to talk about this.
Okay. Don't mean to derail our conversation from the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, but thank you all for the update and the background. Is there any more business to come before Austin Affordable Housing Corporation? If not, then at 1:10 this afternoon, we will be adjourned.
I'll make a motion.
Made a motion. Carl moves. Mary seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Meeting is adjourned then at like 1:10.
Can I say one thing real quickly? I'm just using an example. Corpus Christi, they did like 13 of those transactions. They just voted to undo those. One of the reasons why they were able to get out is at the meeting where they approved those transactions, the meeting was not properly called. So that's why I'm kind of a stickler on appropriateness and the motions. And so that if there were something we do, we want to make sure that it is done correctly. Although at the end of the year, we always come back, Bill and them send us all the stuff to make sure everything we did that was not done right, we can correct it. But that's why I'm kind of a stickler about making sure we do things right.
Okay. Thank you.
I would hate for us to have to undo a transaction.
That'd be terrible.
I can set a transaction like this that was done really well.
I think we've done all this okay.
Yeah, we have, but...
Okay.
Commissioners, we'll go to action item number 4, which is Resolution 2932 by the Board of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to Cascades at Onion Creek. 1, acquire the site of the development. 2, lease the development site to the owner of the development. And 3, such other actions as necessary or convenient to carry out the resolution. And, of course, these are the same items you just heard previously on the AAHC agenda. So we would ask for a motion to approve.
I move.
Carrington moves and Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And the ayes have it. Great. Those are the formal action items that we had for today. So I'd like to ask, if I can, get Barbara Chen to come on up, and she's going to give you a quick overview of the budget under the staff reports part of the agenda and just let you know what's going on with our budget and finances real quick, which are generally very positive, with an eye towards us bringing the budget to you all in February.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and Mr. Gerber and all staff. My name is Barbara Chen, Chief Financial Officer of the HACA, the agency. In the financial report, including in the board package, that we do provide the more detailed financial information for the operation for our all the programs or departments and a separate report for the payment properties operation. So I believe that they are included in your board package. So I put it in the summary. I'm going to go over the summary. And if you have any questions, just let me know. So this is me. All right. Now, you, I just mentioned that, that there are total two sets of financial reports that are included in the monthly report in the full package, and they are both they are unaudited yet. So we will, the unaudited financial status of all our programs or our department and properties administered by the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. Okay, I need to change the name. And so it's branded now component unit, that including our AHC, SHCC, Austin Pathway, all the PENI. And for the HOCAS programs, excluding our red properties, the PENI properties, that for the 8 months from since April through November, the 8 months in our fiscal year 2026, that which is ending November 30th, HOCA had a net income of $14.6 million. This is favorable to the budget by about $5.7 million. As usual, that is due to the higher other revenue from our AHC, our AHC in all the property and the development. And then a little bit lower than our administrative expenses than our, what we budgeted for. Another set of data in the report that you have in the package is that for our PENI property. Oh, I'm so sorry. another set of report, financial report, is the, for our PEMI properties, which is the cover the period from January 1st, 2025 through November 30th, 2025. For the 11 months of operation, that the, all the property consolidated, total consolidated net income is after the, our debt rate, debt principal, means our principal payment, our pay of our loans, and also including some transfer from SHCC, that total net income is $686,000. That we use that, normally we use that net income surplus to cover any other capital expenses. Any questions? No? Okay. I put it together, this is just kind of, like you can see, it's just a summary from the financial report for all the properties, including all the COCC departments, Austin AHC, SHCC, and Austin Pathway, Blueprint, all the different departments or the unit departments. So like I already shared with show you that the net income is $5.7 million. I'm going to go a little bit more detail, but still this is a summary from the financial report. Okay, so for all the rental for the department and the non-red, non-PEMI property, we have a total revenue of $7.6 million, which is 99% of are generated from those A properties that AHC owned but managed by AMP management company. Okay, so that's $7.66 million in the tenant rent, which is a little bit, is under budget, about $653,000 short. It's because due to a little bit lower occupancy, also a little, they pay a little bit more than usual of the incentive pay for to recruited, offered to the newcomer, new tenant. And a little bit, about $20,000 higher than the budget of the write-off. That's the tenant rent. And the next revenue, revenue is our HUB money. The HUB payment, that which is a kind of pass-through money. Most of them are pass-through that we got from HUD, for SHCC and also for our assistant housing the voucher program, and also including some from the cities, their TBRA programs, that, and also we have a city provide us funding for the local voucher program that's 100% funded by city's money. So overall, all together, we total receive about $508,000 and $860,266, which is higher than what we original budget for, but because this is a pass-through, so a lot of time is that we, it's due to the rent increase and due to the higher occupancy rate. The next one is pretty much the administrative management fee that we earned, which is the one to pay for all the staff for all our administrative expenses. Totally in 2025 for the 8 months, we total receive about a little over $20 million, which is about almost $500,000 higher than what we budgeted for. Again, the SHCC's the admin fee is based on the HUD payment. So when the HUD payment increase, we also receive higher, it's a in the percentage calculation. So we, so that's why we all mainly from the SHCC higher HUD payment, so we produce higher admin fee that we can earn. So the next one is our interest and the interest income and the plus our investment income for all the year. The next line is the HUD, non-HUD admin fees and the grant. I just shared with you earlier, we do receive two major programs from the city, funding from the city for the TBRA and the local voucher programs. So
tenant-based rental assistance is sort of almost like transitioning eventually to hopefully Section 8 or some other kind of program. And then the local voucher program is city-funded program that mirrors our own Section 8 program.
Yes. Okay. So those two, that's not. That's we earn totally the pretty much we earn an additional small amount of other income that we earned from the other small Austin Pathways program. So totally we earn $818,131. That's our total revenue. It's pretty close, pretty consistent. In line with what we budgeted for. The next item is our interest and investment income that we total for the 8 months, we make about $2,822,000 in the 8 months operation, that we only budget a little bit less than $2 million. So we are over a little bit over $886,000. The reason is that for revenue, we did a very conservative estimate at that time. And that when we prepared the budget at that time, back in a year ago now, there was a little bit dip of interest rate. So that's when I prepared the budget, I based on that kind, at that time, a little bit lower, about almost half point interest rate. So that's why our actual earning is a little bit higher than what we budgeted for. But it's a good thing. So the next one is our other revenue, which mainly including from the management fee, the cash distribution, the developer fee, all those type of things. The asset management fee from most of them are from the AAHC, their developments. And I just want to show that it's over that we earned about $14.8 million, which is a $5.5 million over our budget. As you know, every year when we prepare our budget, AHC always do a very, we always do a very, very conservative estimate. So we just always has been like that we, how we do. Also, there's also another big one is the $2.3 million that we collected. We work with the AMP, so this is their excess cash from those A property, AHC owned, but managed by the AMP management company, because they have that excess cash. So we asked them to distribute that excess cash, treat it as our distribution to us. That's about $2.3 million. Okay, so.
Barbara, you need to explain that to me again. I see it. I see it up there. $2.3 million from the AAHC-owned properties?
Yeah. Sure. We, AAHC, we own a property. We own straight, right? And they are not managed by our team. They are managed by AMP management company. Right. And I started to... kind of have to close the book, clean it up, do everything so I can see where they had their position, financial position. So if you remember last year, we also request another distribution for our fiscal year 2025. In 2026, when we close 2025 again, they do have the excess cash. Distribution is always based on their surplus cash. There's no excess cash, so they do have that. So we request them to distribute that excess surplus cash. And I think that we did about 50%. They still keep almost 50% for their capital improvement, for their any or not. You need to have them working capital. So their asset cash, we basically this past 2 years, we do that HACCP request 50% of their asset cash.
So they are amassing cash through asset management fees?
Yes. For us? Oh, no.
Well,
yeah, sure.
These are just NOI proceeds. I mean, it's the HACCP 5, Sweetwater, Sterling Village, Bentry, Lexington Hills, and South Point. And then you have Eastland Plaza, you have Leisure Time Village. And really, those are just excess cash flow that we just leave in the account, and every so many months, finance will sweep those accounts, and that becomes distribution income. So it's basically just NOI.
Well, and then you show some of that. I mean, in the last quarter, we did these reports.
That's correct.
Like, what is the? So I guess I had thought about where that was sitting, and then what happens to it.
Yeah, and so we'll sweep it and we'll put it into a money market where then it draws interest, and then when Barbara invests that, she basically moves that into investment accounts, but. So those properties are all single-owned by us directly, no partnerships.
Thank you. Okay, so that's our other revenue. That's overall $14.8 million for the 8 months. So our total revenue for the 8 months of operation is $554,991,000. It's a pretty good number, increased quite a lot from last year. And the next category we are going to talk about is our operating expenses, excluding our HAP payment and inter-program, inter-department transfer donations. So the next expenses is the mainly one, the big one is our administrative expenses, that including all the employee salary, legal expenses, the equipment offices, supplies, equipment, and any of those like audit fees. That including the $2.3 million, which we did not budget that number because we didn't know at that time. So this 2.3 is in accounting treatment. The money comes from the property bank account. We take it from those property bank accounts, put it in our AHC bank account. But because this is we own the property straight. So for financial accounting, we consolidate every year. We need to consolidate those property in our overall agency wise. So AHC has this revenue, so the property should treat it as a kind of asset management fee. So that's why you see the we are over budget, but the over budget is mainly due to that $2.3 million. We take it from those property. Those are treated as the property's expense. It's just in accounting, it's a pass-through, but really for the money, it's in our AHC's property. Used to sit in the AMP, those properties, their own bank account, not making any, we are not doing investment or doing nothing, just sitting in the checking account, just idle there. Basically, take it back. That's as over the year, they earned the net, the surplus from those operations. So that's the administrative expenses. Again, we are still pretty in line with our budget. And if you factor in the $2.3 million, actually we are under budget for about $500,000. The next one is our tenant service fee, that is our tenant service expenses, about $1.78 million for the 8 months. It's still under our budget, but I just want to mention that for this program, this tenant service, normally that we pay 1 month behind, late. So even it's a 7th November, so a lot of November's expense is not in there. I just want to make that's why they are under the budget now. They still have a half million there. Their expenses is not half million, $426,000 under the budget. And this type of expense is including those all the resident service, those coordinator, all the positions, their salary, and any of the family self-sufficient support expense, including IMA, the one we're just talking about. So that's all in this line, the tenant service expenses. The next one is utility expenses, that the 8 months, that again, this is mainly this central office building, utility expense, and all those A property managed by the AMP property, not including our penny. Okay, so this is just this building and those A property. The $746,000 is very, very close to what we budgeted for. The ordinary maintenance and operation expenses that we have about $2.78 million, which is $348,000 higher. We have a little bit plumbing issue. Also, we also spend a small extra amount basically to make this site ready, and the kind of maintenance expense is not enough to capitalize, so it depends. So some of them are related to this side of making this site ready for renovation.
That is outside of what we got from insurance proceeds?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the ordinary, including the maintenance staff for the property's maintenance staff, and we do have a few to consider the maintenance staff for the central office too. The next expense is the protective service. It's $183,000. That's for the those eight properties plus this building. We do spend some small service and contracts, and we also spend some, like we call masks. The Austin Pathway, they purchase the mask. Those kind of for safety issue, we always charge it to this. So overall, that's the line, $183,000 for the general expenses. That is $8.48 million. It's over the budget. We budget the item we are under. But it's over. It's because there's a $1.2 million unbudgeted items from those four of the A property managed by AMP property. Because a lot of time they share with us, they due to the safety issue and all those renovation, the site improvement, they have to do $1.82 million. Actually, we did make a small loan too for them to cover the cost too. So that's $1.2 million that is happening in the four of the A property. That $1.2 million is mainly on the site improvement. Okay. So the total regular administrative expenses for the department, for the subsidiary altogether, is about $33 million. Like I say, if excluding those extraordinary items, we are under budget. We still know pretty good with our budget. This is in accounting, we classify as a non-operating expenses. For us, the biggest one is our hub expenses. Hub expenses, we current for SHCC, AHC, the city's program all together, we spend $506.8 million for the 8 months. As you can see on the top, the second line, the revenue, we total received $508.8 million. From HUD, from the city altogether, but we spend about $506.8 million. That is mainly the extra funding. It's not extra funding. It's the timing issue from the our HCB, our assistant HUD, second aid program. They release a little due to the federal government shut down, so they did an extra $1.97 million released earlier to, right before the shutdown. So that's the one that is in our bank account. We use that one to pay for our December's expenses. So you are going to see, if you look at next time, you look at December, December is going to, the revenue is not going to, it's going to be $2 million short. Okay? But we are only up to November. That $1.9 million is due to the federal government shutdown. When the federal government shutdown, when they do that, they do that. They sometimes they look at our available budget, they will release extra money. Yeah, that's what they do. But it's a temporary. It's not, and this is a pass-through funds. We can do nothing. We can only use to pay for the rent, for the tenant's rent. There is a small $490,000 transfer donation. This is mainly to, we transfer the money, donate the money from our SSHC to the PEMI property that we every quarter we we review and make sure that we need to transfer sufficient funds for the PEMI property to meet the debt ratio. That's what we do every quarter. So this is for the we only did the two transfer. We only do the transfer only on a quarterly basis. So for that, so this is for our transfer from our SHCC to cover to the PEMI's property to help them to maintain, to meet the debt ratio requirement. Any questions about the department, subsidiaries, budget, the expenses, everything?
Going back to the rental income.
Sure.
Do you build in, like, now Santa Rita is totally...
Not yet. No.
Okay.
Not this is this
not our old public housing, not our, this is just the eight properties,
yes,
that we own free and clear, mm-hmm, with no partnership.
Correct. Oh, I'm sorry. With a small, about $200,000, the central office charge SHCC about $18,000 a month as a rent for the facility cost because they don't pay utility, they don't pay maintenance. So that's a monthly. I just want to be the small amount, but like I said, 99% of that line, $7.6 million, is all from all those eight properties.
Okay. So, Barbara, we're going to lose Carl, Chairman Ritchie, in just a couple of minutes. Any other quick highlights you want to give to the board?
No, like I said, we are pretty much in line. We are still operating very effective as what we budgeted for, the board approved for. So I think we have done pretty decent job.
Good job.
I don't really have a concern that extra the 1.2 is kind of, since I've been here 5 years, this is the first time. So I think the property is also very well maintained. So it's very good. No, it's just that a lot of time we didn't know. That's it. So that's why they didn't budget for. But otherwise, no. For the property, I do not have any concern, any questions, unless anybody has.
I think what's a little bit confusing about the way this is presented is it says all programs combined.
Yeah.
So it's not really all programs.
Yeah.
It's the eight properties that we own outside of any partnerships.
Mm-hmm. So you want me to, when I say all program, because I basically based on the how we report the our financial to HUD, because all those eight properties are actually they are under AHC for their own straight from AHC. So those properties not for reporting purpose, they are not a stand alone. They are considered kind of our component units own the property. So that's what how we do, and that it's just that the housing authority, the structure of our legal entity, that's how we are. So that's what I have been, maybe I let me think about it. Let me think if I can make a small change. Okay?
Sure.
But we always, for our report, we always separate into two different, based on calendar year, their fiscal year. And all this one is based on the fiscal year end as March 31st, from April through March. And the other set of report is based on our It's based on current years because they are the red property and they are not required, but since we have a tax credit property, you can only be as a current year. So that's why we separate them into a two set because they are different fiscal years earned.
And I don't want to hold this up.
And we'll continue to present more financial information to you. I think we got to wrap. But so the board is aware, so we continue to have, even though it's reported that we have $71 million in reserve, it's really actually a little bit higher than that. It's at $374 million. We have all compensated. All balances are reserved. Sick leave and paid absences and those types of things. So you'd say in general the condition of the agency is very healthy.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
The report, you can see that we do have a $71 million. We have additional $3 million. That is, like I say, it's a two separate reports. It's in the payment, and this amount is already set aside all the money to cover those employees. Compensation, the vacation they accrue, the employee earned accrue, the vacation, sick time, all those things. And also the board approved that before my time, you approved $2-3 million to set aside to cover the operation. So those are already excluded in that total numbers. Okay? That is over $10 million.
Yeah, if every employee that we have that's eligible for retirement decided to retire effective February 1. Do we have enough money to pay them out?
Yes, for all their leaves and remaining leaves and balances, correct. And then, of course, it's whatever they've invested in there through the Housing Agency Retirement Trust that we set aside for them.
Our employee retirement, we deposit money put into their own investment account. All those retirement it's not on our book. They are extra.
But we pay out leave, don't we? Pay out sick leave and
correct.
Do you still call it annual leave? I don't know.
Yeah, up to 240.
That out.
Yeah. Up to 240 hours.
240 is still the...
It's capped, yeah.
Okay.
I don't have the report. The report, we do have the numbers. If you look at the compensation, it's there. Mm-hmm.
Okay. About 2 weeks. As long as you assure me that it's there.
It's absolutely
there. They decide to leave.
It's there. We don't
have one.
So let me touch on two budget items real quick. Well, one budget and one scheduling item. So
we don't need to continue all this. You are
yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks. Go ahead.
No, I'm good.
Okay, good.
You want to talk about budget.
Stay for just a sec. So I want to make the board aware of something that will affect budget. Many of you know that we're active in the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. The chairman and I have been asked to step into a leadership role for this 2-year period to work to try to expand resources for, frankly, policy development and increasing research and impact. As we do that, working with corporate partners and others, we as an agency have historically given NARO about $75,000 a year, about $25,000 per conference over the last 2 years, helping NARO post-pandemic. They've had a real struggle to try to sort of rebuild. This year, help underwrite conferences and events, correct, and events, and also to strengthen our impact as well. Southwest Housing has really benefited from some of the expanded work there, too. All that said, this year we'd like to do something a little different. This year we would like to make a one-time, this year only, $100,000 contribution to NARO for purposes of the creation of this fund, really thinking about NARO tomorrow, if you will, and thinking about, again, really focused on policy development and on research. But that's an amount that really gets close to where we need board approval to do that. We think that this year, given the changes in the housing policy environment, that it's very, very appropriate. And others we're seeing lots of changes. You see all the fatigue people, there from all the HUD, changing HUD policies and congressional policies. We need NARO to be robust, and we need to be an active part of it. And so we're able to do it. We feel like this year it's appropriate. Again, this would be a one-time, one-year thing, and Carl, if Mr. Aaron, if you'd have anything you'd want to add to it, but that would be.
Yeah, they've asked Mike and I to chair or co-chair a committee that's focused on bringing in corporations to create a corporate council that would give money toward NARO. And I think more so now than ever, then they need the policy staff depth and the ability to do all the analysis. There's a gentleman named Ben Hobbs who got assistant secretary, got confirmed, and he has like five kind of principles that he goes to work with every day. And one of them is to reduce the number of public housing agencies that exist. So the other four are kind of along those lines. So we need to be able to have a trade association that's strong enough that can do the research, that can go to the Hill, that can talk about the importance of what we do, why we do it, more so now than ever before. And so, you know, Mike had approached me with the idea. I said we ought to, you know, make sure we discuss it with the board. You know, I agree that now is the time. We've been fortunate to help NARO raise money, but fortunately they've been able to raise money. But, you know, people want to give money to nice things they can see, and so that money's gone towards scholarships. So that's money that goes to help other kids who live in public housing. But in terms of your operating expenses, that's where they're lacking. It's hard for the money raised. And so Mike and I agreed to take on that role and responsibility of trying to create this corporate council, bring in all the Yardies and Neil Roth and all those folks, and really in particular try to bring in the financial investors who invest in tax credit deals to get them to see the real need to advocate on behalf of NARO and to help NARO be able to be a strong trade association. So that means giving money for operating expenses as opposed to scholarships.
Coach Rose's, the Coganoses. The goal of the fund is to
stop.
Not set yet. You know, certainly we'd like to see it be at least 250, maybe 500. You know, I think it depends on sort of how how broad we can we've got to have something that's investable, and we've got to have first investors in to say that they're.
Just to give an example, so when we were, like after COVID, Mike said we'll give $25,000 toward the Washington Conference. Then Oakland stepped up and said, okay, you're in, we're in. And so it's kind of like you got to have somebody first to step up. Yeah, so we're trying to take on that role as the lead investor to get other housing authorities to step in. But to show the corporate partners that we've got skin in the game, and we very much want them to put skin in the game. So it would be to create a board for them to have members on, to have quarterly meetings to talk about what they think they need for the industry and how they can also help the industry. So.
Absolutely, and the investment groups and the banks and everyone in between. And the consultants who work in the space, and really the whole ecosystem. You know, I mean, their bottom line is impacted by it. So it's a big ask, we know, but we would, we feel like it's, we've got a rainy day fund. I think it's raining a bit, and before it starts raining more, it's important to note we would need a motion to approve a $100,000 one-time contribution for us to give those funds to NARO. These would come from exclusively non-federal dollars, and only from HACA earned funds and non-federal dollars. Well, I don't know if it'll ultimately name that. I've nicknamed it that, but that's essentially what the goal is, to think about where we want NARO. Second all moves, Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion? Absolutely. To date, the only investor. Any further conversation? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great. The motion's approved. The second item before the chairman leaves is it's a three. Tell her it's I thought it was three, Mike. I can't do it. Yeah. We are going to have some. It's going to be difficult to get everybody together at the March board meeting. So we're set for February 19th. All of you will be here, which is great. The challenge we're going to hit though is for March, which is our meeting was scheduled for the 26th. But some folks are doing different things. There's a Texanaro conference that day, and there's a couple of members who are not going to be able to be here. So I can't be here on the 19th. And so we're wondering if Thursday the 12th could work, or Friday the 13th, or Monday the or Tuesday the 17th of March. And then the intent would be to cancel the April meeting. So there will be no April meeting. So this would be so we do the March meeting, which is our annual meeting, which we have to do. Then then April, we'll kick off the new year by canceling the meeting. But could the 12th, 13th, or 17th work for you all? Again, 12th being a Thursday. Friday is the 13th. The 17th is St. Patrick's Day, yep. That might be a fun day to meet. We could do everything in green.
I'm available.
Okay. 17th?
Yes.
Commissioner Duncan-Hall? Okay, the 17th it is. Tuesday. Yes, ma'am. Tuesday the 17th. Okay. So we're going to take one brief pause, and then we have one more presentation. Laura Bodai has done an excellent presentation on the Section 8 program that we want to update you on. However, because we're going to lose the chairman, we want to acknowledge that it's people's birthdays. And so it's a very interesting thing that all of you have your birthday. Commissioner Carrington is celebrating her birthday today. Commissioner Duncan Halls is on the 18th. Commissioner Apostola is on January 26th. And Chairman Ritchie is on February 3rd. So, and you're February 1st. How does it get better than that? So if only you were a commissioner. So, but isn't that interesting? We'll have to make sure that we'll tell the mayor that the next commissioner we get is going to have to have their birthday or that. Their birthday, yes. So when we are done, for those of us who can stay, there's cake and cupcakes next door. But I want to acknowledge happy birthday to all of you, and thank you for what you do for the agency. And I know we're going to lose the chair, so yeah, take a cupcake with you. We also did want to get on your calendars the Santa Rita groundbreaking and the Rosewood Courts grand opening. But I think Ann and I will try to work with you all. Would you all want to do that now, take a look at dates, or would you rather we float some dates?
Okay.
So let's look at Rosewood Courts. We let second half of April, basically the 20th. The HACA board meeting is on April 16th. How would folks feel about doing the Rosewood Courts grand opening on April 16th? And we could do the board meeting that morning at, you're not here, Commissioner Carrington's not here. I did cancel April. You're right. We're not doing April. So, April 24th?
Yeah.
Thanks, boss. Friday, you mean Friday the 24th? Commissioner Carrington, are you?
Yeah.
What is you?
That
would be, no, we would just, no, that would just be the grand opening of Rosewood Courts. Uh-huh. Does that work for everybody? And does that work? Okay.
The
24th
is for the
IMO.
The
conference.
Yeah.
Oh, is that 21st we can't do. That's how about April 29th?
Okay.
It's a Wednesday. Which is good because it's not a council day, which means we'll have better luck getting the mayor. And we're also going to invite the HUD secretary. And so I probably need to have like 3 dates to be able to present to the mayor and the secretary's office. So
April
29th. Could I ask you all to do April 28th and the 30th as well? So maybe we'll look at 28th and 30th. So basically we'll have that whole week is the week we want to try to, or May 1st. So the goal would be to try to get Rosa Port's grand opening that week. Is that good? Is that okay? So that whole week is available if you all can do that. Okay, I'll check with Carl and see if he's available. That works out great. April, hopefully, yeah. And then we want to do the groundbreaking for Santa Rita Courts. And so I think we're looking at doing that in June. Is that the... Let's look at June, early June. Okay. Maybe the week of June, June 8th. Well, if we do the Rosewood, then it's taxing on staff to do those big events. Although the groundbreaking... Yep. I worry about coverage. The problem is you don't get as much press coverage if you run the events too tight. You need them about 60 days apart, 90 days apart. They'll cover you. You're good for about 3-4 times a year. And Mayfest is May 1st, yeah. Mayfest. So if we looked at the first 2 weeks in June, does anybody have conflicts? Those first 2 weeks in June? Okay. Let me talk to the to Chairman Ritchie, see if the first 2 weeks of June can work. That's great. Okay. Is that helpful, Ann? Okay, great. Good. Done that yet? We just canceled April. So let's see what we get on that. Okay. So we'll have May, June. Yeah, usually miss one summer meeting. So we'll let's go a little more further down the calendar. And we need to talk to Ron about kind of the flow. So please visit and some other things that are going. Okay. So Laura is going to come up and present on the Section 8 program. We can take a quick 5-minute break.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah. Do we tell people to come down too? Oh, people are coming down too. Okay. Okay. So, so you sent that out already. Oh, I thought you were going to wait till we were done. Okay. Sorry. We invited some staff to come down and have some cake. That was all. It's not here. Okay. Why don't we do a bathroom break, have some cake, and we'll come back in and we'll let Laura do a report. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
But we'll...
He takes it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought she said very much. Yeah, just because she says she wants it.
Okay,
come on, go have a cake.
No.
Let them.
Turn it over to you to. So maybe just to set the table just a little bit. So it's been a while since you all have gotten a briefing on our rail assistance programs, and we wanted to give you a quick update. You've heard a lot about shortfall because we're in shortfall, which means that the amount of money that we've been allocated, we've exceeded the amount of money that we've been allocated. And there's good news about that, and there's good reasons to do it. But this will give you just a little bit of an overview, and Laura will take the lead, and I'll offer color commentary.
Great, go ahead. Great. Thank you, Mike. Good afternoon, commissioners, fellow HACA staff, and guests. My name is Laura Bodai. I am vice president of the Assisted Housing Department here at HACA. Today I will provide a general overview of the Housing Choice Voucher Program and the financial shortfall, as Mike mentioned, that occurred last year in 2025. We quite possibly will, yeah. It's a little too early to forecast, but, yeah, that's definitely possible. So I'm going to start here on the first slide with the general overview of all of the voucher programs in the Assisted Housing Department. You can see that the Housing Choice Voucher Program is by far the largest, HCV as we call it for short. It's also the one umbrella program that is listed here. As the funding for the HCV program applies to many special purpose programs that lie within it, which I'll get to in the next slide. So these are six groups. They also represent six funding sources. I have listed them in order of size. So below the Housing Choice Voucher Program, you have the Mainstream Program, which is the second largest, then the Emergency Housing Voucher Program, the TBRA, the Tenant-Based Rental Assistance Program. We have the Continuum of Care, and then also the Single Room Occupancy Program. Those last three represent collectively 2%. So the main large ones are up top. I want to dive a little bit more, as you see, 90% for the Housing Choice Voucher Program. As I mentioned in the last slide, they were these are all different funding sources, and the shortfall occurred in the Housing Choice Voucher funding. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that. And as I mentioned, there are a number of different programs that fall under the Housing Choice Voucher umbrella. I've listed seven here, starting with the largest, the VO1, we call it, which is housing almost 5,000 families currently. We also have Veteran Affairs Supportive Housing, otherwise known as VASH. That's the second largest, and the projects-based voucher program. And then taking up the remaining 5%, we have the Family Unification, the Foster Youth Independence, the Stability, and the Non-Elderly Disabled Voucher Programs. Yeah, of course.
All over the board.
So the project-based vouchers, we took vouchers largely out of the green, the VO1,
the big one.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And we project-based those, so those can serve a general population.
Mm-hmm.
Although we told the people we've assigned those vouchers to, they have to be transitioning homes. So, and we have oftentimes married up those project-based vouchers with VASH vouchers, which are serving chronic homeless
vets.
And there may also be some other categories of vouchers as well. So, but the main reason there, those project-based vouchers, those came out of the big green pot.
And there are also
any property and any of our recent properties that we have vouchers residents.
We've assigned, and you have that list of, I think, 20-something properties that this board has assigned those vouchers to. And so the decision, if you sort of think about it,
that's
you all made the decision to pull vouchers out of the green and designate them, which green could serve anybody,
right.
Fair to serve anybody, to a specific project for 20 years. For 20 years, and those properties can only be serving chronically homeless persons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, geographically, if you were asking geographically where they are around town, I mean, I don't know that they're, I would say more so east side, or do we have a region that's more populated with our project-based vouchers?
Yeah, more so east side. There's you know, a lot of our projects with Integral Care and mm-hmm. LifeWorks and with, but you know, Family Elder Care and Foundation Communities and others are more scattered. But some of the bigger projects now that we have are east.
So we've been working towards more of the opportunity, mm-hmm. high opportunity areas, and I know that we're encouraging those spaces to contain people who have offices as well.
Absolutely.
So I didn't know whether or not that was kind of a new general direction of what we were doing with that.
With the project-based vouchers serving exclusively chronically homeless coming off the coordinated entry, through the coordinated entry system, most of those properties are closer to the center of Austin.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Services. There's a lot more services closer in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Most access to health care, jobs and job training. Mm-hmm.
Not to be nitpicky, but you might check the spelling on veteran.
I saw that this morning, and I'd already sent it to Jorge. Thank you very much for pointing that out. Okay, so each month our finance team and I collect leasing and housing assistance payment data, and we submit it to HUD through their system. It's called the Voucher Management System, VMS for short. This data is used to forecast funding levels throughout the year. So this data is also incorporated into another forecasting tool, which starts on my next slide. It's called the two-year tool. And I'm going to spend a very small amount of time here. This is like welcome to my daily, right?
Laura really lives in this. Morning, noon, and night, she's working.
I've become quite familiar with this tool in the last year. It is actually capable of some pretty awesome things. But for this conversation, I'm going to pay attention more so to little pieces in these two corners here. So on the next slide, I've compiled some important cells for this conversation. So you can see in 2025, again, let me point out, this is what the two-year tool looked like at the end of November. Okay? So vouchers awarded for the 2025 calendar year, 6,502. We have a budget authority that was awarded of $86,942,641. We have, as you can see, can I walk a little bit? As you can see, we have to watch both of these indicators, right? So we've only leased up 89.1% of our 6,502 vouchers at this time, at the time that this two-year tool was pulled. But we have forecasted, they're forecasting that our funding is 103.8%, right? Which shows us, forecasts us into funding shortfall of $3,473,773. So we meet with HUD regularly. We look at these numbers. We look at these tools. I do want to point out.
Can I please. That number where you say, oh, my God, we're $3.5 million
right.
over. I mean, looks terrible.
Give it some context.
Just by way of contrast, when I told that number to my colleague in Los Angeles, I was laughed at and said, and was told, when it gets to be over $125 million, let us know. But there are folks all over the country who are really facing a world of hurt. This one is a very manageable amount of shortfall. We don't want it to get bigger, but it's very manageable, and we understand very much why it is. And so,
mm-hmm.
Laura.
It's a good segue into the why slide. Did you have a question?
So let's go back to that slide.
Mm-hmm.
So to address the shortfall, we could just lease, we could issue fewer vouchers, correct?
That is one of the things that we put in place, yeah. Go on, I'm sorry.
No, I think that was...
Yeah, I'll go into...
Come back. Yeah, if we didn't want to be in shortfall, then we could control our vouchers so that it equaled 100% of our funding.
Well,
but we would be serving less people.
So when we decide, when we made the decision collectively to project base, what we put ourselves on was a roller coaster. And the reason we're in a roller coaster is because usually when we're working just on the tenant base side, we'll go and say, okay, you know, in March we should issue 5 vouchers. We can, we have budget authority for that. In April we shouldn't issue any. We're using the 2-year tool in May. Okay, we can issue 20. We see it in June using the 2-year tool. We shouldn't issue any. And that's how the program's been managed for all the time. Lisa and others, and Lisa went in the shortfall too. I mean, the program has been a shortfall a few times. This is just Laura's first go around. She's managing it beautifully. But when we decided to go and project base, instead of doing 20 units at a time or 5 units at a time, and within, you know, and being able to adjust, we've made commitments of hundreds of units,
mm-hmm.
all being built.
Or so, at the very least a year.
In advance.
10 years. And, mm-hmm. and part of it is also when are those units going to lease up? So when Katie Lofts, for example, opened up with, you know, with 100 units, you know, we're committed to 80 of those units. So they moved 80 people in a month. And so we were, you know, suddenly we're more in shortfall, you know, and then we dug out of it some and we're kind of above the line. And then, you know, another property opened up and we're, you know, 50 units down. So we're kind of going back and forth.
Managing it.
Mm-hmm. And HUD in earlier times, was, you know, they understood it. They got it. And they were actively encouraging us to project base because it helps address the nation's homelessness. Now it's a little bit different. But we're working through it. And the good news is at the end of this, there's a very happy ending to the story.
Yeah.
So, but it is important to know that we're going to be on this roller coaster of being in shortfall sometimes and out of shortfall at others, probably for the next 5 years.
Okay, but I want to know, why are we committed to 20 years? What's magic about the 20 years?
Oh, so that's the standard housing assistance payment time frame for project basing a voucher. And the reason is that it's we basically are providing a guarantee of subsidy that enables that property to pay back the debt on the property.
Okay.
So in effect, our contribution, us paying the rent, makes that property happen. It makes it financeable. People would not have given
it. To how we're financing the property.
Absolutely. So if you look at one of our properties, and so just to give you a sense of it, each voucher, let's say each voucher averages a cost of about $1,300, we're paying maybe $1,300 a month in rent. Is that fair? And you multiply that by 12, in a given year, this is just on one unit, we're putting $15,600 into that unit. And you multiply that by 20 years, and that's $312,000, just one unit with one voucher. Well, if you multiply that over, say, 50 units, which is what we have in many properties,
mm-hmm.
that's a guarantee of $15.6 million going to that property. And so with that, the market, debt providers, you know,
investors
and lenders will say we can finance that property because we have a guarantee of...
To get the finance.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep. We really become the key to making these developments happen. And frankly, the cuts that have happened at the federal level in homelessness funding, and now with Proposition Q not having passed at the city level, I don't want to say we're the only game in town, but we are a big part of the game that's left on the board.
And they're ready to go out again fast and then next year.
Well, we won't talk about that today. We'll hold off on that. But you can see the difference we're making.
Oh, yeah, I had not realized that. What we
build with the project. Yeah. It makes all the difference in the world as far as investors and lenders are concerned, because they're not looking at the tenant to make the payment. They're looking at us as a guarantee that those dollars are going to come in monthly. Laurie, can you go back to, I think I know the answer to this question. No, one more back. So on project-based, that comes out, well, maybe one more back.
Okay.
Are there any other than, so on project-based, we make those decisions. Ron, you all, yep. We make the decision about how many vouchers we want to project-based to a particular property. Mm-hmm. Are there any other of these categories that we can move out of VO1 into one of the other categories? Or are they pretty much... like stability vouchers, it's 42. That's how many were allocated.
Mm-hmm.
Non-elderly, 32. That's how many were allocated. So is there any fungibility?
Those other vouchers are referred to as special project voucher types. So special purpose voucher types.
Okay.
And so
various categories.
Correct. So they function. So functionally, everything is kind of coming out of Section 8, out of the big
thousand trees voucher pot, yeah. Right?
But you can't. Yeah. So a VASH voucher is a housing choice voucher,
mm-hmm.
But it's matched with supportive services from the VA,
mm-hmm.
And we fight really hard to get more of those VASH vouchers when we can, but they have to stay within that piece of the pie. Likewise for foster youth independence, which is we really need so much of in this city, and been helping our partners at LifeWorks tremendously. I mean, they wouldn't, if we didn't project-base all of our foster youth independence vouchers to LifeWorks, you know, at least two of their properties wouldn't have been built. And so and we're hoping we'll get more of that funding, but that stays locked down in that category.
And I don't properties have
services all of them do. Everything we've mm-hmm. project-based has to have permits. Okay. Have to have the supportive housing group, too.
So what about the stability of those houses? Are those included in the emergency, you know, like women abuse type of situation?
The stability vouchers are, they're not actually victims of domestic violence. They're homeless vouchers. We have, I'm going to say I have.
We do have categories.
We do. You're absolutely correct. The emergency housing voucher, homelessness, or victims of domestic violence. And then also stability vouchers are homeless at risk of homelessness. I do want to point out, while I have your attention, that the project-based voucher number here are specifically VO1 project-based vouchers. So we have project-based some VASH vouchers, as you're aware. That is included in the 580 number under VASH. Just to point out, right? Those we have committed some foster youth independents that are yet to be online, but when those come online for utilization, they will be included in the FYI number. Does that make sense? Okay. I want to.
And we should maybe mention one other
thing
that's going on. So
please.
If you go back two slides, the.
Forward.
Yep. Go back. No, go back.
Go back? Okay.
Yep. No, go back.
Forward. All the way to the beginning. Okay. Okay.
I don't really want to know the rationale for cutting off the funding yet.
No.
I personally think it's cruel. I mean, I think it's just cruelty. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's why we need NARO to be as strong as it can be to help make that argument that this isn't how we treat people. The thing that's especially cruel is we made commitments to these folks and they have used those funds and are working to get stabilized and then we've pulled them away. It's one thing to say we're not going to do any more of that. It's another thing to break the commitment. So.
Mm-hmm. I will say that Dylan Schubitz of Assisted Housing and his team, they've done a great job at decreasing the number and of already putting participants in the Housing Choice Voucher Program and other programs, because when we first heard of the funding ending, it was 240 participants. So they have done they've made a lot of progress, and they'll continue to work on that number to get them in other programs.
Denying other people in other categories.
And Tyra, I also want to, you are correct on the victims of domestic violence for the stability. I want to, for the record, so it's clear. Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay, so let me move on here to the why. Some reasons, not all inclusive, of why the shortfall happened. We've talked about the project-based vouchers. So in 2025, we had over 200 project-based vouchers come online. These commitments were approved by HUD, all of them, by you as the HACA board, starting in 2022. So I think it's important to mention here that the way HUD funds our program is based on previous year spending, right? So if a project-based voucher unit were to come online in 2025, for example, becomes housed, utilized, we start paying the housing assistance payment, we won't get the HUD payment for that until the next year, right? We won't get, it's essentially, they don't front load, so to say, the funding, which is a large impact, of course, to our spending in a current year.
Am I wrong about the climate at the time that even though you may not front load and you are supposed to pay it the following year, you could easily decide not to do that and move money to another area?
I'm not sure.
More time?
Yeah.
Well, if the government says we have already allocated so much funding for this area for the following year, and in many cases they've already done this. They just said, no, we're not going to fund that any longer, and we're moving the money to another program area. They could still do that, and we have no resources, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we are subject to federal appropriations. However, when it comes to this program, and one of the reasons we moved out of public housing into Section 8 and into rental assistance was because this part of the budget has always been historically more stable and has always increased. Now, the increases might be more modest, and this year it looks like it's going to be modest, and that means we won't be able to entertain the big rent adjustments that people might be seeking. Generally, so far, this area of the budget has held. And I think it's because, frankly, people are very anxious about, we make commitments. We sign legal contracts. Mm-hmm. It's supposedly the full faith and credit of the government. And if those commitments aren't upheld, landlords will back away from the program. It'll leave people, housing vulnerable and cause all sorts of other problems, that we think. So this part of the program seems to be holding on. I'm grateful that we got out of public housing because I don't think anyone's going to see any investment made there.
Yeah.
Not just our agency. That's why.
All right. I'm
going to
be more optimistic.
Thank you, Tom. And this is one point here on this slide, just to be clear that we have not rescinded or withdrawn any vouchers as a result of shortfall, and we don't foresee having to do so.
And we haven't lowered anybody's rent. Some communities have had to lower have lowered rents,
mm-hmm.
rent payments, and we haven't had to do that either.
We issued fewer vouchers.
Absolutely. So
none.
Yeah, that's the way we're addressing it. We're issuing fewer vouchers. Mm-hmm. So we don't rescind, we don't lower rent, we just issue fewer vouchers.
Right. And there are some excuse me, there are some HUD-mandated restrictions. Voucher issuance is one of them. So we stopped issuing VO1 vouchers, I believe, back in September of 2024, before we were even in the HUD categorization of shortfall. So we kind of saw that we needed to slow down in that area at least. But the HUD-mandated, once you are designated in shortfall, you can't issue new housing choice vouchers except for these four programs listed. So the project-based vouchers that we've already committed to, the VASH vouchers, the FYI, Foster Youth Independence, and the Family Unification Program vouchers. So we have continued to operate those programs.
Also do most of the other partners, don't we?
Yes.
So what happens if you say you can no longer issue an additional voucher? What do they do? Is there any way for them to pick up slack, or do they depend on us for that?
I mean, they clearly still service the vouchers that are in utilization as far as issuing vouchers to other. I mean, there are vouchers. So.
Yeah, they won't issue their own voucher. They depend on us for the housing support. But they, in some cases, they have gotten some support from the local housing voucher program, mm-hmm. which is, but that's a city-paid-for program. The city's only making commitments for 5 years, which is less than the 20 years that we're making. So it's a far less attractive commitment. And it also is only being used for project-based purposes. It's not being used for tenant-based. So... But there may be some changes in that program coming as well. Keep in mind also for VASH and for foster youth and family unification, those are special purpose vouchers that are coming through designated channels. So whereas the... It's all coming from the feds, but it's coming through a specific... it's a specific funding stream. Well, but it's that if you look at that big pie, it's all part of the green tube.
Okay.
But it's a set aside, and those set asides are being maintained, and they want us to continue to issue vouchers in those set asides, but the project based vouchers, those vouchers come out of the big green tube as well, but those vouchers. From HUD's perspective, they're kind of stuck with them because we've already made that commitment and HUD approved that commitment.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to make any more commitments
right.
for a while.
Right. One of the other restrictions that we put in place is we can't, the term is absorb incoming portable vouchers. So a short definition of that is a voucher holder is able to travel to another public housing authority and move into their jurisdiction. And then that other housing authority has the choice to either take on that voucher and pay for that voucher or bill the initial public housing authority. So we have to bill wherever they're coming from. They're still able to come to Austin, to our jurisdiction, but their initial public housing authority has to keep on making the payment. No, I mean, right now we're still going through the difficulty of setting up that system just because we didn't have, I mean, the billing, the monitoring, so internally we're still struggling with that. But, and hopefully other public housing authorities are compliant and easy to work with. So, this is what, again, back to the two-year tool. We've moved forward. We are now end of the year, and we have received set aside funds of $3,794,397. And there's a specific place in the two-year tool on the set aside funding field to input that data. And then this is what we have. So at the end of the year, we still have the same utilization of our units, but our funds have come down to 99.7. It has put us in the black. After receiving the set-aside funding. So the set-aside funding also is based on HUD's calculation using their own two-year tool on what they saw us as needing to make us whole, so to say. So they provided that funding. And so as I also said, HUD funding is based on what was spent the year before, so actually the shortfall amount of 2025 increased our 2026 funding by that same shortfall received amount, that $3 million $794 and change dollars. So that is good news. It is a growing of the program, and that's a benefit that we have received from being a shortfall for 2025.
It's kind of a perverse incentive, and Barbara and Laura really navigated this really well, because now our new baseline is reset to that higher number.
Yeah.
And HUD knows that agencies are struggling because Congress set aside like $250 million for shortfalls all over the country in these programs. So our shortfall was a very small one. But getting the additional, $3.7 million is really a nice win in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
for the program, because it wasn't growing otherwise.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we have to celebrate the wins, right? Despite shortfall, also I want to mention the department still received the 104% in our 2025 CMAP review. We have had zero audit findings. So the department, I've felt really lucky to inherit a pretty strong staff that was built over the many years that Lisa was over the department. It runs really well. And we also have a great partnership with our HUD team. We meet with them regularly. They're very helpful and supportive. So that continues still. So,
as rents in Austin go down, it'll be interesting to see when mm-hmm. the fair market rents come out, what, in March,
mm-hmm.
What they are. And that could help us with that shortfall also.
Right, right. They decreased, if you remember, last year. They actually went down, which is, I don't know the last time that's happened. They usually at least rise a little bit, yeah.
They go down a little bit again this year.
It will be interesting, absolutely.
But the problem we have is we can't take them down. So here's the catch. When you all approve increases in fair market rent, those kick in the next month. When we want to propose a decrease in fair market rent, we have to give landlords a year's notice of the decrease.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't be that nimble in it.
It will at least keep us from raising, which we've done historically every year. And so last year our response was just keep them the same, which in a way was decrease on what would normally have happened with an increase, yeah.
But I think we're leaning towards probably holding steady. And we'll talk to our HUD partners, mm-hmm. and we'll also check with Ron and see some of the real market data that we're seeing. Because the last thing we want to do is we don't want to be inflationary either. If we set rents too high,
mm-hmm.
then we're contributing to the very inflation and prices that we don't want to see. So but I will say this has been tricky, and there's a lot of complexity here that at some point, if you ever want a separate briefing on it. But I do want to really say thank you to Laura. I mean, this has been to walk into quite the show and to go through this has been, not easy. It's really skilled management, a lot of complexity, and the HUD folks, usually I've been through a couple of these shortfall runs, and one time it was very rough where HUD was. And I will tell you now, I just told her, now I'm just into the, I want to support her as a good friend. And I want her to be, she's been here for 29 years. She deserves that next adventure. And for her, I don't think I'm violating any trust. It starts for her. She's actually a friend who's running a marathon in Tokyo, Japan. She's never been to Asia. This is her chance to go. So she's doing that, and she's getting out and doing some things that are really important to bring refreshment in life and to recharge. And we just wish her all the best.
Well, I think it speaks well for any agency who can hold on to people for 29 and 30 years. So.
Yeah. And there's always room for her if she wants to come back. She knows that. Madam Chair, I think we are we have no executive session, and so we need a motion to adjourn. Okay.
So it's time for us to entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor, please signify by saying no. Meeting is adjourned as of
2:51.
2:51.
Thanks. Thank you all.